Okay, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Austin Gimondo, talking about wastewater-grown algae as a fertilizer.
Thanks. And thanks for being here at 5:45 on Thursday evening. Like I said, I'm Austin Gimondo. I'm a PhD student at Iowa State University. This presentation is actually over my master's work, which I just finished up this spring. So my master's work had to do with just evaluating wastewater-grown algae as a fertilizer for horticultural applications. So that included container crops as well as some turf trials. But this presentation is one portion of that, which was an extruded bioplastic and algae fertilizer pellet evaluated for some floriculture container crops. So just a little bit of background. Floriculture is a high-value sector of the horticulture industry. It's over $4 billion in 2015. But high production densities, high quality requirements, and the use of soilless crop culture necessitate the use of heavy fertilizer inputs. And these fertilizers are typically synthetic and applied in water-soluble or granular forms. But impact or drawbacks of these fertilizers like that are linked to the ecological impacts of their production and use have led to a desire for sustainable alternatives. So bioplastic fertilizers and biologically based fertilizers in general show promise for filling this niche. And recent work by McCabe et al., soy-based bioplastics were developed and used as a fertilizer for floricultural container crops. An example of the soy pellets they used is in the bottom right here. When incorporated into soilless media, these fertilizers provided adequate fertility and performed similarly to synthetic slow-release fertilizers. The authors noted that additional nutrient-supplying components to bolster nutrient concentrations would be useful for improving these bio-based bioplastic fertilizers. So that's where the wastewater-grown algae enters the picture. In general, when I say wastewater-grown algae, I'm referring to complexes of green microalgae that are grown on wastewater as a growth medium and a nutrient source. And so this process has a dual purpose in both algae biomass production, but also the wastewater treatment. The algae is capable of removing polluting nitrogen and phosphorus and sequestering those elements into its own biomass. And so research has shown that when these wastewater-grown algae are then applied to container crops or seedlings, they provide fertility effects, effectively delivering those sequestered nutrients then to plants. The algae in this project was grown on these revolving algal biofilm treatment systems, which are what's pictured here. And these are novel systems that were developed at Iowa State that have improved the efficiency, which was formerly a bottleneck for wastewater treatment with algae. So they've improved the efficiency and made it more available for use in other applications. So in this work, we developed 10 formulations, which were comprised polylactic acid, or PLA, which is a bioplastic, soy flour, wastewater-grown algae, and there was also one formulation which included a small percentage of biochar. Of these 10 that are pictured here, 6 were selected based on their processing qualities and their material properties for greenhouse evaluation. And so 2 experiments were carried out with these pellets, the first of which was just a general efficacy trial with the 6 formulations to see if they work as fertilizers. And then a second experiment followed that where 2 that performed well were selected for application rate trials. So the rest of this presentation is just about the general efficacy of the 6 formulations. We grew African marigold and Gerber daisies for 5 and 8 weeks respectively in a soilless media of perlite and peat moss. In addition to the formulations of the algae fertilizers, we also used a synthetic CRF, as well as a commercially available waste treatment co-product, which I'll call the commercial bio-based treatment as a comparison for what's currently available. All of the fertilizers were applied at a standard rate of nitrogen, and it was complete randomized by crop with 10 units per treatment. This table has the NPK concentrations of the different fertilizers, and So a couple of things. The notation that I'll use just to refer to all of these different formulations, an example is 50-25-25. So that's the material that had 50% of the polylactic acid, 25% of the algae, and 25% soy flour. So when I say 50-25-25, I'll just be talking about that formulation. The other thing to notice is because of the different nitrogen and phosphorus and just nutrient components here, when they're applied at a standard rate of nitrogen, the phosphorus applied in those algae fertilizers is going to be a little higher, and the potassium was lower. So the plants were received in a plug tray from a commercial greenhouse, and then when they were potted up into containers, the fertilizer treatments were weighed out and incorporated per unit in the greenhouse, and then they were arranged randomly within the greenhouse. Data was collected at the conclusion of growth, and so we first measured substrate pH and EC with the pour-through method. Then we measured the shoot dimensions and calculated a growth index. And so the growth index we used was an average of the plant's height and average width, and so that was just to represent its overall size. The shoots were then severed, dried for 3 days, shoot dry rate was recorded. Finally, the shoot tissue nutrient concentrations for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium were analyzed. So here are some photos of the representative plants from each of the treatments. The size is a little deceiving because in order to fit everything, the Gerbera had to get shrunk, but this is just for relative comparison. Starting at the far left is the unfertilized control plants, and then moving to the right is that commercial bio-based, and then the synthetic CRF. And then the six to the right are the different formulations of the algae fertilizers. And as you can see, there's a lot of variation, especially in the marigold at the top, between treatments. There's plants that are large and dark green to small and very nutrient deficient and damaged. There's less variation in the Gerbera, but again, there's still some that are larger and healthier appearing. All of fertilizer affected all of the responses we measured. So in this figure, the results for growth index and shoot dry weight for both crops presented. And I'll go through this one bar chart at a time, highlighting the important results. And I'll start with marigold in the top left, its growth index. So growth index is along the y-axis, and then down along the bottom, you can see the different fertilizer treatments. In marigold, the synthetic controlled release fertilizer and the 50-25-25 led to the highest growth index, but all of the algae-based pellets led to higher growth index than the commercial bio-based fertilizer and the unfertilized control. And then, again, growth index in the Gerbera. There was less difference among the different treatments, but, again, the CRF was in the highest, but this time four of the algae treatments led to similar growth index. Now, in the bottom left, the shoot dry weight of the marigold, so shoot dry weight in grams is along the y-axis. The CRF led to the highest shoot dry weight, but, again, all of the algae fertilizers led to higher shoot dry weight than the commercial bio-based and the unfertilized controls. And then in Gerbera, the CRF again was the largest, but along with the 50-25-25 material, and then amongst the other treatments, there is not much difference. Here the nutrient concentrations of the marigolds are presented. Doesn't show up very well, but the green highlighted are the highest. It's just along with the lettering, so it's another way of seeing that. And then the asterisk indicates sufficiency, a published sufficiency range for shoot nutrient concentration. The most interesting thing from the nutrient concentrations is that none of the treatments led to sufficient levels of potassium, and that the lowest levels of potassium were those plants that looked the worst in. And then the same results for Gerbera. And in Gerbera, the nitrogen and phosphorus for all fertilized treatments were sufficient, but again, the potassium, none were sufficient, and the ones with the lowest were also the ones that looked the worst and were the smallest. It's not moving for me. Okay, there it goes. So back to the representative plants, we can see the trends in the shoot dry weight, shoot growth index, and the kind of the nutrient concentrations. That 50-25-25 that was the largest and had similar shoot dimensions as the CRF is the largest and has looks the best relatively. And then again in the Gerbera, and then the commercial bio-based and the 50-40-10 and the 50-50 are those plants that had the lowest potassium levels, and they're also the ones that are the smallest and most efficient. So just to bring it all together, these extruded bio-based with algae fertilizers were effective fertilizers for the plants. They all were larger than unfertilized plants, so they were providing nutrition to the crops. Most of the fertilizers outperformed a commercially available waste treatment co-product that is sold as a fertilizer. And the 50-25-25 can lead to similar size and weight as the synthetic controlled release fertilizer. So as a bio-based fertilizer, these wastewater grown algae products have potential for reducing impacts of synthetic fertilization, and they additionally have the benefit of moving nutrients where there are pollutants in wastewater to a useful position in fertilizing crops. So I'd like to acknowledge the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture for funding this and the Iowa State University Center for Crops Utilization Research for all of their support, and then take any questions.
Time for a couple questions.
So it seems to me that the algae was at least as far as, or at least comparable to what's already there for commercial. Do you know if anyone's thinking about actively pursuing the idea of using algae as fertilizer?
I don't know that. The question was, is anyone pursuing algae commercially as a fertilizer? And I'm not aware of anyone that's currently commercializing it. And as far this is the end of this line of research, so I don't know if anyone else is picking it up yet. Yes. I'm sorry. So the question is, what are the expenses? And I don't know any of the economic side. There's no analysis of cost for this. It was just purely, does it work type of thing. Sure, absolutely. That's definitely the next question that would need to be, if it works, does it make sense economically? Does it make sense resource-wise? Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So the question is, was there any difference in the leachates between the CRFs and then the algae fertilizers? As far as pH and EC, there was no differences or trends that followed between those. We didn't analyze actual nitrate leaching, and that's another really important question to ask as far as what are the impacts of this? Because if it's still leaching, then there might not be a benefit to use it. But so that's another important question, I think, to look at the nitrate in the leachate. Right, yeah.
Since it's already an organic bound source of fertility in these crops, kind of like 5 weeks and 8 weeks,
mm-hmm.
Do you think, was it considered to not mix the algae with anything and just let it mineralize over the course of a short life on the bench?
Right, so the question was to just use the algae alone. Was it considered to use the algae by itself instead of incorporating the PLA? And actually, we did that, and yeah, is what I presented on last year. So it works to just apply the algae by itself, but like you mentioned, it's the release pattern is quicker, and so to extend it, the PLA was incorporated. So yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.